Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, welcome to Your Family Dog. I'm Colleen Pilar and I'm here with Julie Fudge-Smith. And today we're going to be talking about loving the dog you have, not the dog you wish you had. And Julie had mentioned Zuzu and her amazing skills.
Well, in my family, it's when we talk about Zuzu and she does something, everybody's like, well, you know, it's Zuzu. And so if there's any kind of a question about, you know, why did she do that? Well, it's just Zuzu. And so one of the things, though, that Zuzu does like to play fetch. And so my last dog, Bingley, lived his entire world revolved around getting the newspaper in the morning. And it took approximately 2 times to teach this dog to get the paper. And all he had to say in the morning was, bang, hey, it's time. And he was at the front door. You open that door, he's out the door, over the gate, got the paper, you know, coming back in. And, you know, this was serious business. So I thought, well, you know, Zuzu could probably learn. She's a retriever, right? Retrievers bring things back to you. So I went out with Zuzu and we're outside and she's like, oh, look, Mom, it's a leaf. And oh, a squirrel. Oh, and oh, look, it's the paper. And she put her left front paw on the paper and then tried to pick it up. No matter how I tried to get her to like move away, move her paw. No, we had to try and stand on the paper and pick it up. And then she'd look at me like, it's stuck. What's wrong with this paper? You know, did you glue it to the, you know, the sidewalk, Mom? And so finally she just gave up and walked away. And then I held it and said, oh, Zuzu, look, that we'll start with, I'll hand it to her. Right. And she came over and I handed it to her and she went, oh, okay. Shook it, threw it down and walked away. I've tried.
killed the paper.
She killed the paper and then walked away. I didn't know you wanted me to kill it. I thought, you know, that's why you glued it to the cement, Mom. But there are other times that she will take it 5 feet. I mean, we think that's progress. There's sometimes she's like, oh, it's a plastic bag. I'll take that off the paper. I'll leave the paper and bring you the plastic bag. I'm not sure that this is a skill that this dog is going to learn in any reliable fashion. And it's okay. It would be nice on the rainy days and the cold, snowy days that we really appreciated Bing's enthusiasm for picking up papers. But, you know, that's why God made umbrellas. And I just have decided that I have to just love Zuzu, for all her. I mean, she's got one of the things that she does that Bingley did not do, or maybe she's the other way around. Bingley was an inveterate door barker. You know, at the door, it's like, Mom, 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 somebody's at the door, Mom. And Zuzu's like, huh, is there someone there maybe? I don't know. Should we go look, Mom? I have to say, I really enjoy the, I don't know if there's somebody at the door or not mode. That's just really very enjoyable. Not to have the I'm sure there's somebody at the door and I'm going to tell you this until you like open the door and verify my test results here. So, I mean, that kind of brings me back to the idea that, you know, you think that they're both flat-coated retrievers. They're both from the same breeder. They're not closely related, but they do have some relatives. You'd think that you would have a dog that you'd have a couple of dogs that would be fairly similar. Mm-hmm. And yet there are very few Bingisms in Zuzu.
Yeah.
And for me, in many ways, that's a blessing because it would be in some ways too painful for me to have another Bingley. That would just be really hard. And so I can really relish who Zuzu is. But it also brings home to me that it's really important, I think, to have reasonable expectations on who your dog is. And to really love the dog that you actually have in your home, not the dog you think he ought to be. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you wrestle with that. I have people who call and they'll say they have this, you know, 4-month-old puppy and, well, he's going to be a service dog. And I'm like, okay, did anybody tell him that, you know, that may or may not work out. I know Guide Dogs for the Blind has a very low, the number of dogs that come in and go through their puppy program is very low. I think it's less than 10% actually go on to become service dogs. Mm-hmm. And so to impose, I mean, it may very well be that your dog will do that, but you maybe kind of have to look at who the dog is that's come through the front door.
Yeah, it is interesting to see how different dogs come with different personalities, just like people do. And I think people get stuck with it more often when we have dogs of the same breed. You know, that if you have a certain breed, that's your breed. At least for my clients, I've seen that. I had a Labrador who did not retrieve anything ever. He would carry things around. He totally had the soft mouth and loved to carry, but retrieving wasn't his sport. He wasn't into that. And that didn't bother me at all. But it was sort of interesting to just realize, oh, this is different. And
yes,
that can be a stumbling block at times when we have expectations. Actually, someone told me recently that most frustration is really just unmet expectations, and that we should really be examining what your expectation is rather than the actual, you know, he won't do this. Well, true, he won't do that. So, but the frustration doesn't come from him not doing that. Frustration comes because you expect that he should do whatever it is or be whatever, however he is. And my little guy, Edzo, he's at least 13. I don't know. He was 2 or 3 when we got him. And he's never actually bounced back as much as I would have liked. He is a worrier. He is anxious about things, and his default setting is to just kind of shut down. When in doubt, do nothing, be nothing, see nothing, think nothing.
Kind of like Sheridan Saltz on Hogan's Heroes. I know nothing, I see nothing.
It's pretty much what he does, and he does it a lot, and it breaks my heart that I haven't magically found the joyful puppy inside him, because I'm a dog trainer and I should have been able to do that. So the frustration there is my unmet expectation right there. Because he's awesome. He's kind and he's gentle and he's sweet and he's very loved. But he has some baggage, and all these years later, 11 and a half years later in my house, he's still carrying some of that. And if I spend all of my time comparing him to our previous dog, who was, you know, social and outgoing and thought everyone was there just to adore him, that makes it even harder.
Right.
But so I'm pretty good at not doing that. I'm not perfect at not doing that, but I'm pretty good at not doing that. But family members aren't always. I've definitely heard a number of comments about, you know, why is he like this? He's often described as broken. Your dog is broken. And I'm like, but he's sweet. Yeah. And he's kind and he's good and he's gentle and he's not a problem in my home. He's not doing anything bad. Mm-hmm. He's worrying about things. So that whole idea of, you know, loving them as they are, accepting them as they are and meeting them where they are is really important.
I agree. And I think when you start to do that, then you can still have just a tremendous appreciation for those things that they do bring. They mm-hmm. may not bring what you expected them to, but I can really, like I was telling you earlier, that we finally found Zuzu's one great talent. And we are clinging desperately to this talent. And it was really surprising, because what it is, when we were out hiking the last couple of times, the trail became kind of hard to find. You couldn't find the trail signs. And Zuzu picked out the trail every single time. She was just terrific at finding the trail. And I'm like, Zuzu, you have a talent. This is so exciting. And, you know, I was just going to accept her for the loving, sweet, gentle thing she was. But now we have a talent. And that's really exciting. And
that's a pretty good talent.
It's a damn good
talent. I mean, that's a really good talent to be able to find your way. I mean, because sometimes the trails aren't all that well marked.
No.
And you think, I could easily be hiking myself off in the wrong direction. But if Zuzu's on the job, that's awesome.
Yeah, well, which reminds me of when we got to the hike, and I was in the parking lot, and I let her out of the car, and there was a young couple getting ready to go hike, and Zuzu went over and, "Hi, you're my new best friend," and she leaned into them and like, "Hi, I just knew you were going to be here," right? So we head off down the trail. They go to the left, we go to the right. So we go up the hill, and they go up the hill the other way, and we meet at the top of the hill, and Zuzu goes up to him, like, "Hi, do we know each other?" Greeting them all over, and I look over and so she's done greeting them, and there's this bush along the side of the trail, and there's no leaves on it, no nothing, it's just this bare stick, and she's just kind of leaping up in it, just no rhyme or reason. And the guy says, "What's she doing?" I said, "I haven't the faintest idea. I have no idea what she's doing and or why." But we started talking, and I told him about her secret talent of being able to, you know, find the trail. Mm-hmm. And so we were talking, and I then told him about a couple of things to look out for on the trail ahead of them. So it turns out we ended up meeting back in the parking lot because they went on to to the way they went, and we went down. And we got in the parking lot, and I said, "So I see you made it out of this magic circle that they make you go around and around." And she said, "Oh, yes." She said, "At one point," she says, "you know, we couldn't really find the marker." And she said, "But then I said to myself, what would Zuzu do?" And so I thought, yay, our talent can be extended beyond just ourselves. But it was just delightful to think that somebody thought, oh, what would Zuzu do? I never thought anybody would say that, you know, what would Zuzu do in this situation? So, yeah, it's a talent.
And they may carry that forward on future hikes. What would Zuzu do? This is totally unrelated, and I may have mentioned it in a previous podcast, but the what would Zuzu do and having someone else carry it reminds me of in Rowdy Rovers, one of my clients told a story that was only funny in retrospect, where her dog was just losing his mind and people were there and they wouldn't move and she's stuck. And eventually she finally gets control of the dog and she loses her shoe. So she's got one shoe left in the street. So I told her that now when I see just one abandoned shoe in the street, I think, oh, it's a Gizmo shoe, because it makes me think of the story about when Gizmo was having a very bad day. And it's just sort of that random, like, it's been a year and I just drive down a road and I'll, because you always wonder, how does a shoe wind up somewhere? Well, it's a Gizmo shoe. It means that the dog was being so reactive and the situation was so bad and nothing happened and the person's shoe fell off and they couldn't retrieve it. That's what happened in that moment. So now whenever you're hiking and you're thinking, I'm not entirely sure of my direction, you can be thinking, you know, what would Zuzu do? And other hikers are thinking that too. So time I'm lost in the woods, what would Zuzu do? That will be a helpful thing. Because I just love having like dogs pop up in your world and in places you're not, connecting.
When you're totally unexpected them to be. So, yes. Yeah. It's also truly amazing because we tend to say that Zuzu is both nearsighted and near-nosed because, a ball will go flying past her and just land next to her and it's like, I can't find it. I don't know where it went. It's got to be here somewhere, you know, and it's, and she'll eventually find it probably 90% of the time. But nonetheless, so for her to find the trail every time is amazing. And I don't know if it's her sense of smell or it's just, I don't know, her guardian angel. Do dogs have guardian angels?
I'm sure they do.
I'm sure
she was celebrating with her guardian angel in that naked bush at the top of the hill. She was like, this is where we do the ceremonial dance, the guardian angels of the trail.
That's right. But in other ways too, I think that this can also be, this idea that you have to love the dog that you have can also be a bit of a guideline too for people who may be struggling with the idea of whether or not they need to rehome a dog. Mm-hmm. Because while we want you to modify your expectations to meet the dog that you have, it could be that you have very reasonable expectations. This dog is not capable of achieving those expectations for your particular household. And therefore, that might be, as we've talked about in our other episode on rehoming, not every dog is the perfect match for every family. And so you may need to realign your expectations. But if you have legitimate, reasonable expectations that can't be met by this dog, then maybe this is not the right dog for you and your household.
And so that's something I've said about Edzo. Like, Edzo is awesome and I adore him. But if I had gotten him when my kids were much younger, I wouldn't have had the right household for Edzo. I wouldn't have, you know, just with his level of concern and the fact that he doesn't signal well or advocate for himself well by leaving, he just freezes. That's not a good situation with small kids. But he came when my kids were bigger. And so we were able to navigate all of that. But it wouldn't have been a great situation for either of us if, you know, if he had lived in a house with small kids and I had wanted him to be different. He isn't different. This is who he is.
Right. So. And it was kind of that way with Bingley. Needed a little bit more management than Zuzu does in certain situations, especially with other dogs. And if I had had small children and had to try and go for a walk with this dog and manage him with other dogs while trying to manage my children, that would have been a heck of a lot more difficult than it was with having it one child I guess my kids were in junior high and high school when we got him. So it's the same kind of thing that it became a manageable situation because my situation had changed.
Mm-hmm.
And if
we're still even on the subject of kids here, many years ago when my sister's kids were little, she had a border collie mix who was really, really busy and for his entire life could get into any garbage can anywhere, no matter what lock you had put on it, he could get it.
That's
and
amazing.
He was awesome with her children. And so there were times that my sister would be very frustrated by his activity level and his behavior. And I would say Presto is awesome with these kids. So going to love him for who he is, you know, the kid piece outweighed the fact that he licked icing off of a birthday cake right before a party. I don't care. He's awesome with your kids. And the fact that he got cookies out of a Tupperware that was on top of the fridge. I don't care. He's awesome with your kids. So, I mean, I do care. And there are management strategies we can do. But the fact of the matter is, I'm not going to be mad at him for finding opportunities and taking advantage of them. That's okay with me.
That's right. And he's a border collie, so he has an intelligence that's higher than you know, the average, you know, human genius. So, the fact that he got the Tupperware container off the top of the refrigerator and opened it and got the crease is really not surprising when you preface it with border collie.
Right.
If you were to preface it with Zuzu, it would be a miracle, you know, a feat beyond belief. So, so I think that that's true. You also have to scale your expectations to what's really important, setting priorities for what's important in your life.
Yeah.
And having a dog that is wonderful with your kids is a super top
the
priority.
The number one priority. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes. I had a client a while back who he had border collies and he really loved them so much, but he didn't know how sensitive they were. Like, he didn't really understand the sensitive nature of a border collie. And if we're just going to stereotype by breed, he was really more of a, you know, Labrador kind of guy. He was like a big, you know, bang on the dog kind of guy. Ooh, and his dogs would just be like, oh, too much, too much, too much. So again, that falls into the love your dog you're with concept too, of like, we do have to match our interactions with our dogs into their comfort level and recognize that they are completely entitled to their preferences and finding the way that we can meet in the middle is where the joy happens.
Yes. You know, it's the same kind of thing. It all boils down to, once again, as we always say, I think in every single episode, it boils a lot down to body language, being able to read your dog. So that you may expect your dog, you may want and have the expectation that your dog is going to love every person that he meets. That's probably an unrealistic expectation. Mm-hmm. So if you know your dog's body language, then you're not going to be so demanding of him, or you're not going to be so expectant of him or her that she's going to love every person. If you can be like, ah, for some reason you're feeling uncomfortable. You know, I felt uncomfortable at times. I get that. We won't have to meet this person. So I think learning about not only your particular breed, but learning dog body language will help you to become a little bit more keenly aware of who your dog is, so you can help and love your dog for the dog that they are. And so you don't, so that you begin to scale your expectations reasonably. Mm-hmm. If you know that, I had one client several years ago, had an old English sheepdog. It was a great dog. I love this dog. Just lost it with bicycles, you know? And so one of the things that it finally concluded was maybe we need to find someplace else to walk than the bike path. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we can do as much counter conditioning as you want, but it's really putting your dog into a state of hyper arousal for a long period of time. And maybe there are better places to walk. Or if you want to walk on the bike path, maybe we just don't take the dog this time. But the dog could handle bikes in downtown Granville, because the vast majority of them were just parked in bike stations or somebody was walking them along the sidewalk. So it was really, and recumbent bikes really set them off. So, you know, maybe you can just reasonably realign your expectations. So he can tolerate bikes when they're standing still. You maybe don't expose him to the constant bombardment of bike after bike coming along the bike trail.
So. Yeah. And I think we get ourselves stuck with limited thinking sometimes with that, because I've had clients with a similar situation to that, and I was suggesting a different spot to walk their dog, and they said, well, no, this is the closest, easiest, nearest path. And I was like, yes, it's the one that upsets your dog. So because it's closest, easiest, nearest didn't make it the right one. So sometimes when we're shooting down options, we need to think about why we're shooting them down. And I also am a firm believer as a dog trainer in that it's not necessarily always my job to come up with the options. It's my job to come up with the questions that can help you figure out where, you know, like, I don't know your neighborhood. I don't know where the best place to walk your dog is. I can tell you all the things that matter with this spot, you know, but looking for what is going to work for this dog, it is a case-by-case basis. I mean, what mm-hmm. is going to work for this dog? And that's okay. I just think we give people so much more freedom to be different than we do dogs. You know, like mm-hmm. we're not at all surprised when there's a person who, you know, has a passion for, you know, I don't know, making those Bavarian eggs with the fancy dye. We're like, oh, awesome. That's your passion. That's what you do. We don't know anyone else who does it, but you do that. And that's so cool. But when we have a dog that doesn't like what we think all other dogs like, we're like, well, what's the matter with this dog? Why don't they like that? Well, they have something they like. We just don't know what that passion is. There's something. Let's find it.
That's right. And the other thing I find too is that oftentimes if I start to pose questions and they start coming up with the solutions, they're much more likely mm-hmm. to take those solutions because, you know, they've bought into what we're trying to do, that we're trying yes. to find something that's going to work for everybody. If I'm constantly giving suggestions and telling them, I think you need to do this, or you might want to try that, then it's not them coming up with the solution. And I think part of being a dog trainer is not only teaching people skills. I always tell people, I said, it's a terrible business model. But what I'm trying to do is give you the skills for a lifetime of learning with your dog, so you don't mm-hmm. need me. Yeah. And it's like that's really bad business, but it's the way it is, you know.
It's really good for learning. It's yes. it's the best Fine. Way to teach.
That's right. Trying to make myself obsolete. But on the other hand, if you start really using these tools and you start thinking in a creative, positive way, then you're going to come up with the solutions that are going to work best for you and your family. And, you know, that really is the beauty of positive reinforcement training, is the fact that what you're looking at is, you know, I've said this before, is people will say, well, I don't want my dog to jump on grandma. I don't want your dog to jump on grandma either. What do you want him to do instead? And the beauty of positive reinforcement training is you begin thinking in terms of, what do I want to do instead? Mm-hmm. What are the possibilities?
Yes. And that's so interesting because, as some of our listeners may know, I am very much interested in the subject of resilience for animal care professionals, and I'm actively involved in pursuing credentialing and coaching. It's all this stuff. It's all dog training. It's amazing how, you know, all these topics come up in human psychology, and I'm like, yeah, that's dog training. I know that. But it is that idea of telling someone what to do is not the answer. It's never the answer.
No.
Helping them figure out what works for them, whether it's what they want with their dog or what they want to do with their, you know, personal life or where their career should be. That's the key. So it's really coming up with a great sense of curiosity, approaching situations with a great sense of curiosity that what can we learn here? What's here? That is extremely helpful for helping any individual make a change.
Right.
And right. When we're looking at our dogs and we're being frustrated that they aren't acting the way we'd like them to act, curiosity is so much better than judgment every single time. What's right. causing this? Why is this happening? What do I want instead? How could I get what I want? What would be a way I could prevent this? Those are all non-judgment questions. Why does he do this? That's a judgment question. We come up with a story and it's because he's mad because I worked late yesterday. No, probably not. And that's right. not helpful, even if it is. Even if that were true, what's helpful from that? You know?
That's right. He's doing it to get back at me.
I know.
And I was like, wow.
For what? What bad thing did you do?
You do. Dogs are many things, but vengeful is not one of them. But I like what you were saying. It's funny because my kids will always say, we'll be talking and I'll say, you know, if this were a dog, you know, or something, she goes, and I said, you know, it always goes back to dog training. Always. And so they're always kind of waiting until the.
Everything in all of life is dog training.
It does. It all comes back to dog training. In fact, one of my daughters once said, when she was in college, said, well, my mom's a dog trainer. And the guy turned to her and said, does that mean you got treats every time you did something she liked? She's like, no, not really. But anyway.
And also, in some ways, yes.
Yes.
I mean, in some ways, like there was some acknowledgement of your strengths and the things you did well. And I mean, you know, nobody's a perfect parent. If I could parent again, knowing everything I know now, I would make different choices in some cases. But
absolutely.
Overall, I do think I tried to set my kids up for success using many of the same tools that we use in dog training, you know, recognizing what they were doing well, rewarding successive approximations toward a goal. All of that kind of stuff. And I'm happy to say our kids turned out pretty good. I think yours are awesome, and I think mine are awesome. I'm completely unbiased about that.
Yes. But one thing I did not do was walk around with a clicker and a bag full of Skittles.
I did not. No.
I did not do that. I tried to reinforce in other meaningful ways.
Yes. Well, and, yes. There are many, many ways to reward.
Yes. And I also tried I just remember we were, this is not a reward, but we were traveling in Italy, and we had taken the girls to Italy on a field trip. I homeschooled, and we had finished, Emma had finished Rome, and Ellie had finished the Renaissance, and so we decided to go to Italy as a field trip.
And family vacation.
So we're in Venice, and we're waiting to go into the Accademia. It's a wonderful museum, and has some really interesting works of Da Vinci. And the girls are starting to sort of snark at one another, do something. And I'm saying, you know, please stop. You know, we're in public and the museum will be open in just a minute. We're going to go on in. And they started doing something. And I finally said, okay, that's it. We're done. No more snarking at one another. Each one of you is going to pick a work of art and you're going to write about it and why it is significant to your life today. And I thought, you know, I've been trying to, you know, trying to redirect. I'm trying to, you know, say, hey, I know you're cold, you know, acknowledge the frustration and so on and so forth. And then finally I said, that's it. But I'm going to be creative in my punishment. And actually they both wrote pretty good essays because by the time we got in and I helped them find a piece of work that they actually liked and then started asking them questions about it, they both ended up writing pretty good essays about that particular work. So even when it was intended towards a punishment, when I realized what I had done, it was like, okay, let's see if we can turn this back into a positive. So I guess I mention this because I'm not a perfect parent in any way, shape, or form. But, you know, even when you make a mistake with your dog or with parenting, doesn't mean that you don't have an opportunity to redo it, to make a right. difference, to change it around from something negative into something positive.
Even more back to the dogs, your daughters are very different people.
Yes.
And so with that assignment, first off, you gave them each a behavior that they could do, but they had the freedom to choose within it which piece of art. They probably chose very different things and mm-hmm. found very different connections to their life. That's the same, again, in dog training too. So,
yes.
you know, when you're out there with Zuzu and she's standing on the newspaper and wondering why it won't be lifted up, we're going to find a different thing for her. We're going to say, you know what you're awesome at? Finding trails and also cuddling. These are gifts and we love them and we celebrate them and we're going to work on them and build on them. And we can work on building up our weaknesses too. But the real joy and happiness and achievement comes when we find what we're good at and lean into that and build that. So yeah. what is it that your dog is really good at instead of all this frustration about the things that aren't as good? Manage those. Set those up so that they don't drive you crazy. And then find what is the joy bringer and go 110% toward that. That's parenting. That's dog training. That's life.
That's right. And I would also say too, in all that is give yourself a little bit of slack too, you know, mm-hmm. One of the things that, you know, like I said, I knew that I was like, no, this is not going to work. How do I make it work? And it was, I think it's probably my, you know, like my one successful parenting turnaround, in however many years of parenting, I can think of one, but it's okay. We all make mistakes. And I just remember with parenting very early on, I remember thinking to myself, and in the dog training too, it also applies. It's like, if I make a mistake, if there's pretty much a virtual guarantee, 100% guarantee, I'm going to have another chance at this one. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with your dog. If you mistime something or you do something wrong, you know, chances are you haven't, you know,
yeah.
Maimed the dog for life and you're going to get a second chance and try something different. So,
mm-hmm. And when you know better, you do better.
You're better.
So each
right.
time we've learned something new. That way didn't work. We're not going to do that one again.
Yeah, and you might say that a few times, but, you know, you'll find it.
Yep.
You'll find it. Well, thanks, Colleen. I think that was a great discussion. And I really liked what you had to say at the end about, you know, just leaning into that which you can do. And that what your dog can do. And that's where the joy is. You're absolutely right. So we'll see you next time on Your Family Dog.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.